This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Dr. Levy, if you could unmute your microphone, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. The jury has a number of questions. Let me just go through them one at a time. Do you think ketamine can help CRPS patients?
I think that in certain circumstances, ketamine can be helpful to patients with CRPS, particularly adult patients.
How long do the long-term effect of ketamine last that you testified, parentheses, the effects on cognition, memory, and mood disorder, DO?
So some of the, some effects improve if someone stops using ketamine. Other effects can be permanent or at least in the very long term.
How long do the short-term effects of ketamine last that you testified about, psychotic symptoms and memory impairment?
So the short-term effects, you know, usually last a few hours in healthy volunteers.
Would a child possibly have outburst or be agitated if they were given ketamine, Haldol, Presidex, and a benzo?
I think it's possible that if a child were experiencing withdrawal from those substances that they might have outbursts.
So I can better understand, you said ketamine addiction is not like heroin addiction, whereas heroin can cause withdrawals of, or in my words, a life of a druggie, thieving, destitution. Ketamine withdrawals or addiction is possibly more akin to my addiction to donuts, and when I don't have sugars, I get grumpy.
Yeah, so there's a lot wrapped up in that question. What I would say is that so addiction can alter somebody's behavior, sometimes dramatically, other times more modestly, and that is, in my opinion, not related to the substance that someone's addicted to. So I think the best example I could give here is somebody's addicted to nicotine and they're in a building where smoking isn't allowed, they might go outside and smoke during a snowstorm, right? That's a modest behavioral adjustment. We've also seen patients who have terrible lung disease from smoking and are oxygen dependent and smoke despite the risks of oxygen being flammable. Both of those are symptoms of loss of control to nicotine. So it's not so much dependent, I would say, on the substance as it is the entire picture.
When you talk about addiction, withdrawal, mental effects, you appear to be talking about humans. Several times today within the same statement that includes ketamine, the phrase, quote, in animals, end quote, is used. Today, humans and animals seem interchangeable, but in your testimony, animals is meant as lab test animals. Is that correct?
So the looking at some of the study, there are certain things that we do not know about humans. We certainly don't have a lot of experience giving very high doses of ketamine to human children, but there have been animal studies that have looked at young laboratory animals to see what happens in the brains of these animals.
What percent of your testimony revolve around actual human observations in clinical testimony, and how much of your testimony was based on non-human animal studies?
the majority of it is talking about humans. When I was referring to animal studies, I tried to highlight that by indicating these are studies that were done in animals.
Is ketamine clearly listed in any accepted medical publication as addictive?
Yes. I think that the line of questioning was confusing, but the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatric Disorders has a section on hallucinogen use disorder, and ketamine is clearly in that category.
Is ketamine in any of the listed categories of the DSM-5 or that official medical book?
Yes. So it's an hallucinogen. In fact, it's chemically very similar and physiologically very similar to PCP, which is the example that they give in that book under hallucinogens.
You said that the levels of ketamine were way over, way high than normal. Are you referring to, or you are referring to, for normal anesthesia?
Yeah, so for, so in my opinion, the doses of ketamine that Maya received.
Objection, Foundation. It's directly responsible.
Overruled, you can continue, Doctor.
So the amounts of ketamine that Maya was exposed to were more similar to the reported amounts of ketamine from people who've become addicted to ketamine than the typical doses of ketamine you would see in medical treatment.
Are these levels too high for CRPS in the United States of America?
So in my opinion, the doses were too high.
Are these levels too high in other places in the world?
So in my opinion, as an addiction medicine specialist, these doses were too high, much too high to give to a child.
Mr. Shapiro.
Sure, briefly. Dr. Levy, you were asked about ketamine for CRPS where you work at your institution in Boston. Do they use ketamine for pediatric CRPS?
So the anesthesia program at my hospital relies primarily on occupational therapy, on non-pharmacological treatments for CRPS in children.
In terms of your discussion of laboratory animals, what happened in those studies to the laboratory animals exposed to excessive ketamine doses?
Objection. Relevance.
Sustained.
Why don't they have human studies of ketamine in the doses that Maya received for you to be able to comment on?
Objection, Foundation.
Sustained.
You talked about the addictive qualities of ketamine. You mentioned that it's similar to PCP. Can you expand on that, please?
Objection, relevance.
That objection I'm going to...
Foundation.
Overruled.
So ketamine is in the same class of drugs as PCP, and it works on the same receptor and has many of the same effects.
Okay. And one of the jurors asked a good question about, is this addictive like, you know, your morning coffee or donuts, or is ketamine, in your opinion, addictive more in the lines of a drug like PCP? What would your answer be to that?
Objection, leading.
Overruled.
The word addiction can be very confusing because in popular language, it's often used to mean something that you really like. But not a true addiction. True addiction, in the medical sense, refers to loss of control over a substance. So, we'll often hear, well, I'm really, you know, addicted to sugar or donuts or, you know, that restaurant down the block. But really what people mean is they really enjoy those things, but they haven't necessarily lost control over them. So we make a sharp distinction between substances or behaviors that can directly trigger dopamine release in the brain's pleasure and reward center, which are truly addictive, that can alter behavior in the kinds of ways that we're talking about, versus these other experiences, which may be very pleasurable, but are not addictive in the true sense.
So is ketamine one of the drugs that can alter the receptors that can lead to true addiction?
Objection, Foundation.
Overruled. You can answer.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
One more.
Are you aware of any studies that show the doses of ketamine that are given to children?
Objection. Bolstering.
Sustained.
That's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Whitney.
Dr. Levy, what is the half-life of ketamine in humans?
It's several hours. I have to look it up to give you an exact answer. I'm sorry.
You don't have an exact answer, right?
Correct.
You'd have no basis to disagree with the critical care physician from Johns Hopkins that testified to this jury that Maya could have been weaned off the ketamine and other drugs that Johns Hopkins was administering within half a day, right?
Objection, mischaracterization.
Overruled.
And also asking the witness to comment on the testimony of another witness.
Overruled, you can answer.
Ketamine is actually quite lipophilic, which is a little bit different from its half-life. I would actually have to take a look at that testimony to give you a real opinion on that.
You don't know if you agree or disagree with the Johns Hopkins critical care physician?
I would like to see the exact testimony before giving an exact answer.
Well, you had the opportunity, ma'am, as a retained expert. Did you review the testimony of Dr. Farhan Malik?
I'm sorry, I don't recall if I've seen that testimony or not. Again, my involvement in this case goes back to 2019.
Well, he testified here. Have you reviewed his testimony during trial?
I don't believe I was provided his testimony during trial.
I want to go back to the DSM-5 because you claimed that ketamine is one of the hallucinogens listed here. So let me just read to you those that are listed here and tell me if you misspoke. Phenylalkylamines. Stop me if you hear the one that ketamine falls into. MDMA or ecstasy. Endoliamines, including psilocybin. Dimethyltryptamine. Ergolines, such as LSD or morning glory seeds. Morning glory seeds. In addition, ethnobotanical compounds. That's how we're talking about with ketamine, are we?
No. Okay. It's a phencyclidine analog.
And gypsum weed. Excluded are cannabis and THC. I don't see it there, ma'am. Is it in the TR version of the DSM-5? Is that what you're saying?
It's an analog of phencyclidine.
So it's not listed here, right?
It is, I believe phencyclidine and analogs are listed there.
And you testified again on redirect here that the amounts that Maya Kowalski was receiving were more similar to the reported amounts of ketamine that are used by people that become addictive. But as we sit here today, you can't testify to her dosing, correct?
Well, I would say that that's not a clear yes or no.
What was the infusion dose given by Dr. Cantu?
Finish, Your Honor, can she please finish her answer?
Were you finished with your prior answer?
I would like to say a little more, actually.
You may.
So although I can't tell you what the specific doses on specific days were, I did review the medical records and thought that the doses were extraordinarily high, much, much higher than the typical dose range given for treatment for analgesic purposes. And more similar to the doses reported by people who've become addicted to ketamine. Now, of course, everything has to be, adjusted for body weight in a child.
When you use dosing in medicine, you use a number, right? A certain amount of milligrams?
Correct.
All right. Tell the jury how many milligrams of ketamine Dr. Cantu administered during his infusions in late 2015?
Right. I cannot answer that question. I was talking about the total cumulative dose that Meyer received was much higher, and the individual doses were much higher than recommended or typical protocols.
Anything further, Mr. Shapiro?
One moment.
Doctor, in terms of the specific doses, would it refresh your recollection to review the report that you prepared? And do you have access to that report?
Yes, thank you. And I do have it on my computer if I may open it.
Your Honor, she's allowed to have access to her report during her testimony. No?
I know, but I have no way of controlling at this point.
May I refresh her with what? Okay. May I approach?
I'll withdraw the question, Your Honor. Thank you. And I thank you for your time, Dr. Levy.
Members of the jury, anything else? It looks like there's another question coming. Dr. Levy, I'm going to place you back on that mute again. And doctor, if you could open the channel back up, please. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, doctor, if ketamine is so bad, why don't they take it off the market, or is there a good use for it?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. Many medications have the potential for risks and side effects, particularly in high doses. So ketamine is actually an effective anesthetic, right? Means it can be used to put people to sleep prior to a surgery. In lower doses, it can be used as an analgesic, meaning it can treat pain without putting people to sleep. But when it's used, it's like any other substance. When you use it in very high doses, particularly over long periods of time, it has the chances of risks and side effects goes up tremendously. And so that's why there are established dose ranges that doctors are advised to stay between when they're using these medications. But that's true of just about any medication that's out there on the market, that at very high dose ranges, it can have dangerous or even toxic side effects.
Your statement of high ketamine usage revolves around your knowledge as an, quote, addiction doctor, end quote, and not as a specialist, as a doctor or research scientist treating CRPS. Am I correct with this statement?
Yes.
And members of the jury, I can't ask the other question. Mr. Shapiro, anything further? I'm sorry?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, and may this witness be excused at this time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes.
Okay, doctor, thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and turn off your feed with us.
Thank you.
Members of the jury, are we going to be able to go for another 45 minutes without a break, or do you need a break? I'm sorry, can we go for another 45 minutes? Your next witness, please.
Yes, the defense calls Kelly Thatcher. Stand here, face the plate, and raise your right hand.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, ma'am. Can you please state your name?
My name is Kelly Thatcher.
And where are you currently employed?
I am currently a pediatric nurse practitioner in the pediatric cardiac intensive care unit at St. Joseph's Children's Hospital in Tampa.
Can you please give the jury the benefit of your educational background from where you went to school through any type of specialty licenses and things of that nature you've obtained through the years?
Absolutely. So I started my nursing career in 2004 after I graduated from Hillsborough Community College in Tampa. I started as an associate nurse. I then got my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing in 2014 from the University of South Florida. And then I continued my education and received my Master's of Science in Nursing from the University of Alabama in Birmingham. I started my career in 2004 at St. Joseph's Children's Hospital. I worked for a year on the medical surgical unit, and then I transferred into the pediatric cardiac intensive care unit, where I spent several years working as a bedside nurse. And then I had an opportunity to become a charge nurse in the pediatric cardiac intensive care unit and the pediatric intensive care unit. So I transferred into that role. I worked at St. Joseph's a total of 9 years. And then I went and opened up a community hospital, Brandon Regional Hospital. I worked there for a year. It was the pediatric intensive care unit that was in the hospital. And then after about a year, I transferred into the pediatric intensive care unit at Tampa General Hospital. And I worked there for a year. And I transferred then to All Children's Hospital in the pediatric cardiac intensive care unit. And after about a year and a half, I wanted to go in search of leadership opportunities, so I transferred to the pediatric intensive care unit at All Children's Hospital. I have advanced training as a pediatric advanced life support instructor. I am associated by the American Association of Critical Care Nurses as a CCRN, specifically in pediatrics. Additionally, I have advanced training as a nurse that specializes in running advanced therapies such as CRRT, which is a continuous renal replacement therapy, a form of dialysis, and also ECMO, which is the ultimate life support device that we have in healthcare.
Now, I'd like to take you back in time, because it sounds like you've worn a lot of hats and had a lot of credentials, but what we're really worried about here is October of 2016. Who were you employed by at that time, and what were you doing at that time?
In October 2016.
Compound question.
Overall.
In October 2016, I was employed as a nurse in the pediatric intensive care unit at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
And how much experience in nursing did you have as of October of 2016?
In October 2016, I had about 12 and a half years of bedside experience, mostly in intensive care units. I think 1 year was outside of a pediatric ICU environment.
And can you approximate how many nursing clinical hours you had up to that point in October of 2016?
Yes, at that point, I had been a bedside nurse for about 25,000 clinical hours, and that would be a gross underestimation because most of my career I worked two jobs. Additionally, I have one other thing I forgot. I worked at a pediatric surgery center in the operating room and in the pediatric anesthesia recovery room as an extra job during my career.
Did there come a point in time that you rendered nursing services to Maya Kowalski back in October of 2016 in the PICU at All Children's Hospital?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And am I correct that you had a couple of shifts that spanned October 7 to October 8th, and then October 8th through October 9th of 2016?
Yes, that's correct.
And those shifts were in the PICU?
Yes, sir.
Do you have an independent recollection of those shifts in the pediatric intensive care unit as it pertains to Maya Kowalski and her family?
Yes, I do.
What do you recall about those two shifts in October of 2016?
I recall that it being a very tense environment. Maya was very belligerent. She had a lot of cussing, swearing language. I remember Mrs. Kowalski being very anxious, asking for a lot of sedation medications. I remember them asking us to increase sedation medications. I know Ms. Kowalski was a nurse, and I remember her asking me to do things outside of the nursing scope and nursing practice. And I also remember that Maya changed personalities a little, and her behavior changed when her mom was outside of the room.
What do you mean when you say that Maya Kowalski's behavior was different when mom was not in the room versus when mom was in the room?
When mom was in the room, Maya was yelling. She was cussing at us a lot. She was very agitated and angry. Ms. Kowalski was coaching her to behave that way. She said, "Maya, you tell him how angry you are, Maya." And so it was really hard to get the room to get calmed down. And then there was a very brief point, maybe 10 or 15 minutes during my time caring for Maya, that Ms. Kowalski stepped out of the room. And Maya was very pleasant. She was very age appropriate, like you would think a 10-year-old would behave. She was kind. She used kind words. Unfortunately, I don't remember what we spoke about, but I kind of let her lead the conversation because I was really enjoying those moments with her.
Did the interactions you described and the differing behavior you described concern you as a nurse?
Absolutely. It's not typical for a child to change their behavior so dramatically in the presence of their family. So I was definitely concerned that this behavior had changed so drastically when Ms. Kowalski was outside of the room.
Now, to respect the jurors' time here, I'd like to briefly go through some of your charting on the couple of shifts in question,
okay,
and then we'll get you out of here after we talk about some of your notes,
okay?
So the first note I'd like to show you is from your October 7, 2016 shift, and that can be found at 1001-2722, and we're looking at the first top third of the page, Clay. That's 2722. We'll focus here on the very first note. Do you see where it says other family demanding to see physician?
Yes, I do.
Can you highlight that entire note there for me, Clay? Why don't you take a minute to read that, Nurse Thatcher, and I've got a few follow-ups.
Okay.
Do you remember the circumstances that led to you putting this note into Maya Kowalski's medical chart?
I don't remember the specific circumstance. Ms. Kowalski was asking us to give a lot of medications the entire time. There were many, many moments in my time with Maya and Ms. Kowalski that they were demanding for more medication. So I don't remember this very specific time, but it was a very recurrent request for more medication.
Now, the note that's below that, 838, if we could highlight that. This, again, is another one of your notes from approximately 10 p.m. on October 7, 2016. Why don't you please read that entire note, and I have some follow-up questions for you.
Okay.
I see here that the mother asked you to push some propofol.
Yes.
In order to, quote, prime the lines with the med, end quote. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
What is propofol?
Propofol is a general anesthetic, and sometimes we use it for sedation in the ICU as a continuous infusion, or we'll use it to do a conscious sedation or procedural anesthetic for doing a chest tube or some other invasive procedure in the ICU.
Now, I see here you have some quotes around prime the line with the med, end quote. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Am I correct that would have been a direct quote from Mrs. Beata Kowalski?
Yes, I would have.
Please explain to the jury what it means to prime the lines with the med.
Okay, so when you're hanging a medication, we usually have it carried in by a continuous infusion through an IV bag. That tubing is normally normal saline or something of the like, and it's about 20 to 25 mLs of fluid. When we hook another medication in to run as a continuous infusion, it usually takes a couple minutes for that main IV fluid to carry it in to where it actually reaches the patient. It actually gets to the end of the tubing. Mrs. Kowalski, when we were going to hang propofol for Maya, her comfort, we were trying to make her comfortable, and she wanted me to push the medication. Propofol is one of the only medications in the state of Florida that nurses cannot push. Ms. Kowalski had told me that she was an IV infusion nurse, so I knew she knew this. So I really thought it was very inappropriate for her to ask me to push propofol. She knew that was out of my scope as a nurse.
And in response to this request, what did you tell Mrs. Kowalski?
I told her that I couldn't do that and that I would just initiate the drip as I would in my normal practice.
Now, we're going to move over here to another note. This time, we're going to go to October 8 of 2016. Clay, we can find this at 1001-3117, please. We're going to focus this time on the bottom third of the page here. The first note I'd like to have highlighted here is 1742. If you could highlight other all the way to the end of that note where it ends with anxious. And if you could please read that, Nurse Thatcher, I have a couple of follow-ups.
Okay.
Am I correct here? You also had the opportunity to interact with Mr. Jack Kowalski, Maya's father.
Yes, I did.
And what do you recall about his requests about requiring sedation?
I actually don't independently remember much of our interaction, and I would assume that was because it was more appropriate, as most of my patient interactions go with families. But at this point, he did say that Maya was waking up and that he wanted me to give her some medication to put her back to sleep. I did not believe that Maya was in any pain and had any indication for a medication for pain relief, I don't know if I thought she looked anxious, but I didn't put that she was anxious in here. And those would really be our big PRN indicators or as-needed indicators to have given Maya medication.
And I use the term PRN, just so the jury's clear, that means as-needed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that means it's not scheduled to be given on a regular schedule?
That's correct.
Overruled.
That it is available if we use our nursing judgment and we find that it's something that the patient could benefit. The doctor will write a PRN indicator, which means they will say as needed for agitation or as needed for pain, and sometimes they'll even specify mild pain, moderate pain, or severe pain. So they kind of guide us as nurses to how they want us to administer the medication. And
now, I'd like to draw your attention to another note from your shift on October 8 of 2016, around midnight, it appears, and that's at T1743. So we could have Clay highlight the entirety of that note, please. I have some follow-up questions. Yeah,
okay.
Why don't you please describe for the jury what it is that this note is indicating?
Okay, so this note to me... I remember this instance very clearly, actually. Maya was still agitated. She was removing all of her medical equipment that we had to monitor her heart rate, respiratory rate, pulse oximetry, which measures how much oxygen you have in your blood. All of those things were very vital to our care for Maya because the medications that she was receiving could have effects of your heart rate, your blood pressure, your oxygen level, your respiratory rate. So to make sure she was absolutely safe, we had all of these, as we would with any patient receiving a continuous infusion, we had all of these non-invasive monitoring lines in place. She was pulling at them. She was pulling at her lines and her IVs. And I remember trying to direct Maya to say, like, Maya, we need those on. The doctors need them to make sure we're safe. And, I mean, without I'm so sorry that this is going to bring out these words, but she said, I don't give a fuck what the doctor wants.
Did the use of the profanity in this setting surprise you?
Maya was cussing a lot. She was cussing during most of my interactions with her. So this one particular instance doesn't stand out to me as I was documenting for profanities. I think I documented this more because I was trying to go to the state of the mind that she was uncooperative and she wasn't caring what the medical team wanted.
Okay. And prior to this profanity incident, what was the mother requesting?
The mom is asking for more propofol.
Okay, that's the same drug we were talking about in an earlier note from an earlier shift. Okay. The next series of interactions I'd like to draw your attention to is from October 8, 2016, and we could find this at Joint Exhibit 1001-2721. And again, we're at the bottom of the page now here. Clay, if you could highlight the textual note at T898 all the way to the end. And this appears to be from about 6 o'clock in the morning on the 8th. Nurse Thatcher, why don't you go ahead and read this note pertaining to Maya Kowalski, and I have some follow-up questions
objection,
for you.
Your Honor. Read to herself?
Read to herself.
Yeah, I'd like her to read to herself.
Sure.
Thank you for clarifying.
Okay.
So when I see here PT screaming, is that a reference to Maya Kowalski?
Yeah, PT is short for patient. We use that a lot in medical documentation.
And do you have a recollection of this incident?
Yes, I do remember her calling us liars. This very specific one, again, it was a very common statement by Maya. But I definitely remember that she was calling us liars.
And did that stand out to you as significant that a 10-year-old would say that to you?
Yes, more so because we don't lie to patients. We are very transparent with patients, and sometimes to the point where it hurts to tell patients things that could be, you know, potential in their future that are hard for us to explain as medical providers because we know it's going to be hurtful and hard for them to hear. So we're very transparent and we're very honest. And I have never lied to a patient, so... It did bother me that I was being accused of lying and that the hospital was full of liars. And it also bothered me that this was very early on in Maya's hospitalization. And to have this kind of state of mind so early in our interactions when there was no indication for her to call us liars. We were very transparent with her and her family.
What did you try to explain to Maya that the hospital was doing in this note in terms of trying to care for her?
I was trying to explain to Maya that although we are trying to acknowledge her pain, we desperately were. We were giving her a lot of medications to make her comfortable. But there's a fine line between giving these medications that can decrease your respiratory drive and keeping her breathing on her own. An intubation or putting on a breathing tube so that we could administer more medications. It's a very high-risk procedure, and we don't just traditionally do that, especially in an instance where there's no indication. I did not feel like her pain was not controlled.
Okay. And you're not the type of – a physician would be the person ordering these types of interventions. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And you're following physician orders at this point?
Correct.
But you have experience with these types of medications and PICU protocols?
Objection. Yeah. Leading.
Oral.
Now, I'd like to draw your attention to the note that's directly below that. If Clay could please highlight it. So the jury can read it, and you can read it to yourself, please. Nurse Thatcher, I have some follow-ups for you.
Okay.
I see here in this note that Maya Kowalski was requesting that Valium be pushed fast.
Yes.
What does that mean to you as a PICU nurse?
We don't push Valium fast. It's a benzodiazepine medication. It can cause respiratory depression. It can cause low blood pressure. It's usually hung over a couple minutes on a pump. And the fact that she knew that we had the ability to push this medication fast, and again, this is very early in her hospitalization, was kind of concerning to me. And the fact that she's asking to push it, she knows there is oftentimes a euphoric sensation that can follow that, and patients will feel this euphoria. And so patients who have been, I've had sickle cell patients ask me to do it before because they've had, you know, chronic needs in the hospital, but she's very little and she is new, at least to my healthcare setting. So the fact that she's asking for it to be pushed was concerning.
In response to this request to have the Valium pushed fast, what did you try to advise Maya about?
I made sure Maya knew that it was not in her best interest, that it has side effects, and I couldn't push it fast. And I also explained to her that it doesn't help with pain. She was telling me she was in unbearable pain. And this is a medication for sedation, and sedation and pain are not the same thing. We would often give a different medication that would be for pain, but Valium is absolutely not for pain. It's for agitation and anxiety.
And I also see at the tail end of this note that Maya was screaming that she wants to be sedated. Do you recall anything about the use of that term sedation and why it stood out to you as significant as a PICU nurse?
Yes, I do remember her asking to be sedated. And again, this is something, this is a very young child. And the fact that she knew the terms, that's something that's pretty atypical or non-typical for a child of her age. And again, I have over 25,000 clinical hours dealing with pediatric patients who are critically ill. And I can't ever recall another 10-year-old asking me to be sedated. It's highly unusual.
Now, over the evening, late evening, night before midnight on October 8, 2016, do you recall transporting Maya Kowalski for a CAT scan?
Yes, I do.
Can you please tell the jury what you recall about that incident on the night of October 8, 2016?
So it was a couple hours into my shift, and Maya had been very agitated the entire evening. I come on shift at 7 p.m. She was yelling, crying, moaning, wanting to be sedated, saying she had excruciating pain. And I worked really hard with Maya and Maya's mom to try to get her comfortable. We worked as a team. I really do feel like it was a team approach to use distraction maneuvers, to do anything we can to make Maya comfortable. And at some point late in the evening before midnight, she fell asleep. And I remember thinking, oh, this is so good for her. Maybe she'll wake up, she'll feel better. And I really thought maybe Ms. Kowalski could get some sleep. And maybe she was also very agitated most of the evening, Ms. Kowalski was. And I thought it would be really great for them both to get some sleep. And maybe they would feel better when they woke up.
At some point, did you eventually transport Maya Kowalski to the CAT scan?
Yes. Right after Maya fell asleep, I left the room. I didn't even make it back to the nursing station. And Ms. Kowalski approached me and said, I think right now is a great time to take Maya to CAT scan. And I would guess I was just taken back a little bit. I didn't understand. We just got her to sleep after hours and hours of trying to get her to sleep. She just fell asleep. I hadn't even made it to the nurse's station. And she thought it was appropriate to wake her up. And I told her that. I said, she just fell asleep. I think she should rest. And she goes, no, I think it's a perfect time to get her CAT scan right now. And so I went up and told the attending to the ICU. I said, Maya just fell asleep. Ms. Kowalski wants us to take her to CAT scan. I told her I didn't think it's appropriate and that we should let Maya rest. And he said, well, if she really wants it and she thinks it's a good time, that's okay. I'm happy to send her.
Okay, and did Maya Kowalski tolerate the CAT scan exam without any pain or anxiety?
Very much. Actually, she was very cooperative. She laid there very quietly. She was awake the whole time. She wasn't moaning or complaining of pain during the exam. So I was really pleased. I really thought maybe we had done a good thing, gotten her pain under control. I was really proud that she had done so well for that exam.
And after, or actually during the scan, did Beata Kowalski offer her daughter a reward for good behavior in the CAT scan machine?
She did. It was actually the first time she mentioned it was on our way down to CAT scan. CAT scan's on a different floor, and it takes a while to get there. So it's normal for us to have lots of conversations with patients. Ms. Kowalski had joined us in transporting Maya to the CAT scan, and I had to take another nurse with me because she had a lot of IVs, tubing, she had a lot of IV pumps, also to push the bed. It usually takes more than one person to transport. And in the ICU, and she was on continuous infusions of medication, we had to take emergency equipment in case there's any life-threatening emergency or she stops breathing, as we all know is a risk of these medications. So the first time we were on our way down to CAT scan, and Ms. Kowalski said to Maya, she's like, if you're really good, I have a treat for you. And I didn't think anything of it. We use treats all the time and rewards all the time. And we use treasure box, we use stickers, we use all kinds of rewards in pediatrics. It's very common for us to give rewards.
Okay, so talk to me about what happened after Maya Kowalski tolerated the CAT scan and we were moving back towards her room on the PICU.
So actually it was even in the CT scan. After the scan, you know, while the scan is only a couple seconds long, and we were on the other side of the wall, the other nurse and myself and Ms. Kowalski, And Maya was starting to come out of the scanner. You know, it's like this little table that scoots out. And we walked around, and I mean, I just got there, and it's kind of a cumbersome thing to get from an ICU patient from the CT scan over back over to their bed for transport. There's a lot of like lines and tubes and devices that you have to make sure don't get pulled out or dislodged. And the other nurse and myself were moving her over, and Ms. Kowalski said, "Maya, you did so great. Now you get Valium."
Is that something that stood out to you as significant, and if so, why?
I was moving kind of quickly, as we always like to do in the ICU. When we have a patient that's off the unit, we want to try to do the exam and get them back to the unit as quick as possible. And I stopped in my tracks, and I thought, did she just say that? Like, Maya has laid here perfectly. She hasn't moaned. She hasn't whimpered. She was perfect. She's not agitated. She's not pulling at anything. We never offer controlled substances to our patients for rewards. That's something we would never do in any hospital ICU setting. We would give a number of rewards, but never benzodiazepine or opiate or anything of those lines.
And did you enter a entry in Maya Kowalski's medical chart about this Valium as a reward incident?
Yes, I did. I was very, very upset that we would ever offer a controlled substance to a child, and I think it needed to be documented in the medical chart.
So Clay, so the jury can see it, can you please put up Joint Exhibit 1001-2719? And we're looking at the middle of the page here. It'll be the textual note 851. You already have it highlighted. Bravo. Take a moment to read it. Does this note here that the jury's reading right now, is it a fair and accurate depiction of the recollection you just described?
I remember it as clear as day. It's exactly what happened.
Now, also on this shift on October 8, 2016, and we're on the same page here, 2719, Clay, we're going to go down to the bottom of the page to text note 892. Do you ever recall a situation where Mrs. Kowalski expressed the desire for her daughter to consult hospice services?
Yes, I do.
Tell the jury what you recall about that, please.
We were in a family meeting, and I use that term loosely. It doesn't have to be a huge team of doctors. It just has to mean that we have gone outside of the bed space where the patient is with an attending physician and other ancillary staff, whoever is needed at the time, so we can discuss a plan of care about a patient that's not in front of the child or the patient. And we had stepped aside, and I don't recall who was with me, but Mrs. Kowalski was very upset at the in her opinion, lack of medication that was being administered. And she did state out that we may as well consult hospice, and that way she can have enough medication and let her die because she doesn't deserve to live this way.
Was that a concerning statement to you as a PICU nurse?
Oh, very concerning. Very concerning, because we deal with death and dying all the time in the pediatric intensive care unit, and I take it very serious. And these children who unfortunately pass away in our care, we have gone through everything for these children, and they have fought a hard battle. Pediatric hospice is an incredible service, and they take care of children in their last moments of life. And Maya was not a terminal patient, and hospice is for terminally ill patients. So I was very chilled when she said this, because there was nothing in Maya's care that made me think she was at risk of dying.
In the 25,000 hours of clinical hours you had up to that point in time, had you ever experienced an interaction between a patient and her mother such that you did on October 7 and October 8 of 2016?
No, sir. And I have also, in my additional 15,000 clinical hours since taking care of Maya, have never had another interaction with a family and a child.
Were you concerned for Maya's health and well-being on the days that you observed her?
Very much so.
And why is that?
Because I didn't feel like Ms. Kowalski had a limit or a ceiling to what she was willing to do to get Maya the medication she felt were needed. I felt like Maya's pain was semi-controlled, but once she said maybe we should get hospice or consult hospice, I just knew that there was not going to be a limit to what she was willing to do.
No questions at this time. Thank you for coming in today.
At the time that by the be still by the eighth, you believed that she really, her pain had gone down.
I believe there were moments when her pain was controlled. I don't think it was controlled completely, but she definitely had highs and lows.
But overall, you felt that she was...
I felt there were moments when she had pain control. Again, it wasn't all the time, but she definitely
can
was...
Can we bring up 1001-2326? Now, I'll direct you to the middle of the page and ask you whether you put down on that day that Maya's pain was a 10.
Can you show me where there's... Sure, absolutely.
Top right across under your name.
Absolutely. She did say her pain was a 10, and that's what I documented.
Well, this isn't just limited to what the patient tells you. This is your overall impression of what pain she's in, correct?
Not when I ask her 0 to 10. That would be something that Maya would state.
But nonetheless, when you had to get on the actual scale, as opposed to your narrative, you rated it a 10.
What do you mean when I got on the actual scale? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, which story should the jury believe? That it was a 10, or that it really wasn't bothering her much?
At this moment...
Sustained. Now, you talked about Beata saying we should just take her to hospice. She said that because she shouldn't be in this pain, correct?
That's not what she said. She said to get her enough medications to let her die.
And she was very upset at the time, right?
She was upset. So we all were trying to care for Maya, and we're all concerned.
So you didn't really take it seriously that Beata was suggesting to take her daughter to hospice.
Sir, if a mother states that she wants to take her non-terminal patient or child to hospice, I take that very serious.
Well, you knew nothing about Beata Kowalski, did you?
I did not know Beata.
You knew nothing about Maya, did you?
I did know stuff about Maya. I cared for her.
Before the 7th and 8th of October, you didn't know anything about that.
I knew that Maya wasn't terminal.
Well, that's why I said. She kept asking for meds. The whole problem here was the Kowalskis came in asking for meds, and you all disagreed.
I think we were giving her medication. She was on a continuous infusion of ketamine and propofol. She was getting lots of PRN medications for agitation and pain. We did believe she was in pain, and we treated her for pain.
Well, at this point, you had not had a pain specialist come and see her, right?
Oh, I'm not sure. I worked the night shift, so I'm not really sure when they came in during the day.
Now. All right. And so now, would you agree with me that you should not be the one determining ultimately what the regimen should be for pain?
I wasn't the one. Absolutely not. It was the physicians and the pain team.
And again, was there a possible alternative reason for all this stuff going into the narrative?
I don't understand the question, sir.
Did Maya agree with everything? And it was Dr. Malik and Tepa Sanchez that were there?
I don't recall who the attendings were.
You remember all this clearly? You don't remember the doctors?
No, the doctors are in and out. They have 28 patients. No. My interaction for 12 hours was with Maya. I maybe spent 10, 15 minutes of my shift with the physicians.
But you remember very clearly everything that Beata said, right?
I do. It was definitely things that would stick in my memory, as unusual.
And how long did you prep for this testimony before coming in here with the defense lawyers?
Less than 30 minutes last night. And then prior to my deposition, we met, and that's the only time I've ever met with them.
And didn't you get a summary from them of the questions you were going to be asked?
I absolutely did not receive anything like that.
And so... You didn't review even the medical records?
I have my nursing notes, and that's what I have.
And who sent you the nursing notes?
Mr. Hughes. Office. Somebody in his office.
All of them.
He sent the ones with my name on them.
Certain ones of them, did he not?
He sent the ones with my name because that's the only thing I can testify to.
The reason here now, would it be true in interactions that Beata disagreed with you all on a number of different things?
Oh, she definitely disagreed with us.
And she has an Eastern European accent, does she not?
She has an accent, but I couldn't tell you where it's from.
All right. Well, have you dealt with many people from Eastern Europe?
I've dealt with people all over the world.
And you've seen children before who are acting out, have you not?
Absolutely, of course.
And you've seen upset parents before.
Oh, I'd say there's a fair amount of our parents that are upset. Their children are in intensive care.
And
being upset is normal.
With 25,000 hours of... I thought you did.
I'm finished now. Thank you.
And with 25,000 hours of experience, you must have certainly heard it all.
I heard a lot. I definitely don't think I heard it all, but I've heard a lot.
You heard parents exclaiming that their children were in pain and needed more pain meds, did you not?
Of course, absolutely.
And you had heard parents curse before?
Of course, absolutely.
The Kowalskis, mom and dad, were not cursing, were they?
I don't recall. I remember Mrs. Kowalski being very agitated, but I don't remember her specifically cursing. It also probably wouldn't stick out on my memory because she's an adult. Maya's not an adult. That's why it sticks in my memory.
Is that something that you just forgot to put down in your records that day?
What? What is that?
That whether or not the parents were cursing?
No. I would never put in a nursing note that a parent was cussing.
You did. Put it down, though, for Maya, did you not?
I put it in the context that she doesn't give a F-U-C-K
really
what the physician
question.
Wants.
Can the witness be allowed to finish her?
Judge, may the witness be instructed to answer yes or no, and then they can elaborate if it calls for an yes or no question.
This is what we're going to do. Because remember, we have a court reporter here, and she is going to be really unhappy with me. Because we're all talking over each other. So what we're going to do, Mr. Anderson's going to ask his complete question. You can try to answer that question head on, and then if you have to explain it,
do that.
And then Mr. Anderson's going to listen to your complete answer.
Okay.
So you must have heard it all, right?
I've heard a lot.
And everything that you put down here, you had heard at different times before in your career, true?
No, not true.
I see. You've never heard a mother exaggerate?
Of course I have.
You have never heard a mother exaggerate about her child's pain?
Yes, of course I have.
How many CRPS patients were you treating at this time?
Never. Maya was the first CRPS patient I'd ever cared for, but lots of pain patients.
So this was your first CRPS patient?
And the only one I've ever cared for. It's not something you normally see in the intensive care unit.
And no experts in CRPS, well, were at the hospital, were they?
I'm unsure of that. I don't know.
Well... Did you ask?
About an expert. We had an anesthesia pain team. I was told that they're on the case, so I would have never asked beyond that.
That's hearsay.
That there's a pain team at the hospital, I don't think that's hearsay. That is true.
You heard as opposed to what you saw.
No, we have a pain team on staff at All Children's Hospital.
But this pain team wasn't there during the period of time you're talking about, the 7th and 8th, correct?
Assumes facts, not evidence.
Overrules, she can answer.
They were in-house, I believe. There's someone always in-house, but I didn't reach out to them. I went straight to the ICU provider, which would be my normal practice.
So this was all up to you, correct?
No, sir.
Up to nurses?
No, sir.
Then up to Drs. Malik and Tepa Sanchez?
No. This is a multidisciplinary team that was trying to care for Maya.
Well, who was the boss down there?
Oh, the ICU attending ultimately has the highest say over what happens to a patient, but they definitely consult people who are experts in different areas to get the most well-rounded care, as that's what I would want as if it were me in the hospital.
I could have sworn I just asked you who the boss was there.
Yes.
Who was the boss of the team?
I just told you it was the ICU physician who has the final say in what happens to a patient admitted under their care.
And who was that ICU physician?
We had a number of them. I can't recall who was that evening.
Not a single one?
Not a single one, what?
Well, if you reviewed the notes, then you would have seen that Dr. Tepa Sanchez and Dr. Malik were mentioned, correct?
Yes, I would believe so. I saw their names, and I saw Dr. Laura Vos. But
uh-huh. All right. And
part of our team.
Dr. Malik and Beata disagreed on a couple of different things, did they not?
I have no idea.
Well, they disagreed on putting a cannula down her nose, did they not?
cannula doesn't go down your nose.
Well,
so.
Whatever it is. A tube.
Like a breathing tube?
CTO.
An entitled CO2 device?
Right.
Yeah.
It goes down.
I don't have any idea what they discussed about an entitled device.
Well, isn't it true that there were at least four different times that Beata Kowalski asked for something or suggested something, and this was rejected?
Objection.
I have no idea. I don't even understand the question, to be totally honest. You four times that they disagreed on something? Who, Dr. Malik and Beata? I don't understand the question.
All right. Let me just put it then in terms of what we do know. We know that you said that you wanted to see the doctor wanted a CT scan, right?
Correct. Yes.
All right. And you waited all day for Maya to finally fall asleep, correct?
Incorrect. We wanted to do the scan, and it was actually Ms. Kowalski who was refusing the scan. And she once Maya fell asleep, within minutes, then she thought it was appropriate to go to the CT scan. That was not us refusing.
Well, ma'am, is it just possible that Beata, knowing her daughter and knowing CRPS, actually wanted to wait until she was asleep to bring her in, so that she would be unconscious or barely conscious, so she wouldn't feel any pain?
Objection. There, calls for speculation.
Overruled.
I would have no idea. She didn't tell me why she thought it was a good time for the scan. I did tell her I thought it was not at a good time, since Maya had just fallen asleep after hours and hours of trying to get her comfortable.
But yet you had just insisted on a CT.
I didn't insist on a CT.
Didn't you just tell the jury you were you thought it was time for the CT that day?
No, sir. I did not. I actually told Ms. Kowalski I didn't think it was a good time. It had been at least a day of that scan being ordered, and that Ms. Kowalski was refusing to take Maya during that time. And it was the minute she fell asleep, I was 10 steps outside the door, and that's when Mrs. Kowalski thought it was appropriate. I did never say that was appropriate. Actually, I went to the attending, and I told him I didn't think it was a good time.
Unresponsive.
Overruled.
Error narrative. Answer.
Overruled.
Again,
I
thought.
She allowed to finish her answer, then, Your
Honor? I think she just finished her answer.
And also, insofar as the Valium, Maya had been on Valium before, correct?
Yes, she had doses of Valium before.
What made you think that Beata was saying she was giving the Valium as opposed to her getting some Valium for Maya?
I don't ever remember talking to Ms. Kowalski about her giving Valium. The Valium was about her asking me or for her telling Maya that she was going to reward her with Valium for sitting through the CAT scan.
Well, true or false, you had been there where Valium was discussed for Maya.
True.
All right. And obviously you can't read minds.
Correct.
And you're not a psychologist, I don't
that
think.
That is absolutely
or
correct.
Or a pain specialist.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
All right. So you don't know when Beata said, now you can have some Valium, she was talking about a request to you, that she would request something to you for her daughter, as opposed to, what did you think, pull a pill out of her pocket and throw it at her or something?
She specifically told Maya if she laid still for the scan, she would get a reward. So when she was done, she said, now you get Valium. I don't know how else to interpret that.
Well, you did interpret it, did you not?
I did. Well, I did it at face value of what she said. I took it verbatim.
From get Valium, you discerned that Beata was doing what? What had you discovered by her using that phrase?
To get Valium? She told Maya that if she was still for the scan, she would get Valium. That's what she told her daughter.
And wasn't that to encourage her daughter?
We didn't.
All right. Insofar as knowledge of or asking for a specific medication, do you know anything about the pain levels of CRPS patients?
No, I just understand basic pain principles and how to treat pain on pediatric patients in general.
Do you know anything about allodynia?
No, sir. I'm not an expert in CRPS.
So you don't know how often Maya had been exposed to conversations with doctor after doctor where different medications to try to help her were discussed.
Objection, argumentative, also foundation, calls for speculation.
And sustain.
Did you know whether, or, you know, let's put it this way. Did you ever sit down and actually talk to Beata?
No, I did not. Mrs. Kowalski was not interested in having any conversations with me. I would try to talk to her. She wasn't really listening. I couldn't really make touch similar grounds with Mrs. Kowalski. And I always try to bring my parents in conversations, but she was not engaged at all in discussing anything with me.
You know?
I'm done.
Who is Debbie Hansen?
Debbie Hansen. I don't know.
She was a social worker on duty that evening, was she not?
Maybe so.
Do you have any idea why she would testify that when she asked Ms. Kowalski to sit down, Beata was more than willing?
Can I see you all?
By the way, when Maya came in, did you give her any type of test to see what kind of med she was on?
No.
Well, did you ask Beata what she had been given over the past 48 hours?
I wasn't the intake nurse. I was the night shift nurse. That would have been discussed on intake during the day shift.
So if there was some contraindication, all you would see would be the results of it, right?
Contraindication to what?
When Maya came in,
yes,
there was a veritable cocktail,
correct,
of pain medicines and benzodiazepines given to her, correct?
Correct.
You did not know what she had already been given at the time she came in.
No, I didn't know what she received prior to coming in. Again, I wasn't the intake nurse, so it wouldn't be my standard practice to ask that.
Mr. Hughes, anything further?
No questions, Mike.
Members of the jury, do any of you have any questions? Any more coming, or is this it?
That's it.
Let's see if we can do this up here.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.